evening and welcome to Plan Lehigh Valley, the WDIY program presented along with our partners from the Lehigh Valley Planning Commission. Let's welcome our co-host, Becky Bradley, the Executive Director, and Matt Assad, its Managing Director. Thanks for being here.
Good evening.
Good evening.
So our next Plan Lehigh Valley show will take a look at the evolving world of data analytics. Data is very important, and we're going to look at how it is now being used to guide transportation investment and make our roads, bridges, and trails safer and more efficient. Our guest today is Dr. Sivam Kurel. Dr. Kurel is an experienced regional economist specializing in the application of data science to transportation planning and urban economics. In January 2025, he became the Senior Data and Analytics Planner for the LVPC, where he's developing models that will help reclassify the region's road system and prioritize transportation investments while improving safety along some of the Lehigh Valley's most challenging corridors and intersections. Dr. Kurel's use of statistical methods, machine learning models, and artificial intelligence to study the labor market outcomes of transportation systems has been published in more than a dozen industry, academic, and internet journals. Before joining the Planning Commission, Dr. Kurel worked as a graduate research assistant at the University of Texas and as a research scientist at the Regional Remote Sensing Center of the Indian Space Research Organization in India. He earned his master's degree in transportation planning and management from India-based Redwood University and his PhD in philosophy at urban planning and public policy from the University of Texas at Arlington. So that's all very impressive. And I think we should just shut up and let you talk. And I'll just cue this up with one little question. How much are we going to talk about Route 22 this morning?
A little bit.
Okay. Just a little bit. All right. So Matt, give us a window into this emerging use of machine learning to help determine transportation investment.
Yes. So at our base, the LVPC has been an organization that's always used data as a key tool to make lots of decisions. I mean, that's always been part of the equation for us. But with the emergence of machine learning and artificial intelligence, it just opens the ability to use and analyze an incredible amount of data that you simply can't do with spreadsheets or with, you know, geographic information systems mapping. You know, so the skills that Sivam brings to the LVPC enables us to not only analyze what's been happening in the community, but it creates a predictive model that can help us figure out what's going to happen in the future if we don't make any changes. So that's pretty powerful. Even for someone like me, I consider myself a relatively good at math. This stuff is kind of like magic to me. It's just kind of appears, and I don't know how it got there.
Becky, what are some of the upcoming transportation projects that will benefit from this?
Oh, yes. And Sivam's going to tell you a lot more about a couple of them he's working on already. So I'll leave those. But one of the things that we're doing right now is preparing to update our transportation investment program. And we do a review of that, the cash flow model, every 2 years. And that's called the Transportation Improvement Program. But it's like a 4-year plan, right? So we could use this to predict, you know, when you invest in the first 2 years, what does that look like for the next 2 years after that? So for the 4 years. And then we could translate that into some of our longer range planning, which we're already preparing for. So what happens after those first 4 years, right? What happens in the next 4 years and the next 4 years after that? So it could have, you know, great implications on how we invest dollars. And that, I think, provides us a way to be more efficient. And I think that's great because then that frees up our time to do other things or to make sure that, or actually, and to make sure that our targeted investments are going to get the taxpayers the biggest bang for the buck. So being able to predict those things is important. And that could help us with projects like the Route 22 assessment that will be underway later this year. We're working with the Pennsylvania Department of Transportation to figure out what to do with 22. And so what we're hoping is to bring on a consulting team that could come up with a series of infrastructure investment projects along 22 to improve everything from safety to system efficiency to where do we really need to replace or improve on and off ramp structures for interchanges, or even potentially expand the roadway system itself. So where's the best places to do that, in what order? Because it's not like a thing where you can do everything at once. That would be billions of dollars, and we just don't have it. So the predictive modeling could help us better figure out what projects need to occur, in what order, what are the complexities of those, and then help us develop financial models of how to invest in them. And these are just a couple of things that we could use generative AI, once it's built, the systems are built to do that, to make decisions.
So how is this different than the way things were done in the past?
Without AI, you have to do things a little bit more manually. And so a little bit more manually isn't like back in the 1960s when they had to do everything with a pencil and a piece of paper and an abacus, or at least some sort of calculator or a computer the size of like a football field. We don't have those days anymore. We have been able to build in a lot of efficiencies as it stands now, using, like Matt said, geographic information systems, which takes a series of data and it allows us to project it using geo coordinates onto a map so we can visualize where things need to go. But, you know, we're pulling series of data measures, throwing them in Excel spreadsheets now, seeing whatever has the most checkboxes. For example, does that location have a high percentage of serious injuries or fatalities? Why is that? You know, there's all of these things that we do in spreadsheets now that you can take that information and you can automate it. And the predictive component of it is really where some of the magic happens.
So what kind of investment are we talking about being impacted by this?
Well, potentially everything, I think, because if we're better at investing, then theoretically we can do more, right? Theoretically, we can make the system safer. We can make it more accessible to people. We can figure out where interactions between our walking system, our biking system, our transit system, and then our vehicle systems, you know, conflict, and where we need to improve those connections so people have more multimodal opportunity and provide opportunities for short trips, you know, between destinations within a neighborhood, that those can occur without having to get into a car. All of this is enormously important as we continue to grow. Matt tells me this literally twice a day at this point, but he's like, the Census Bureau released data this month, and it says that we grew 7,000 people last year, not just 4,000, which is our typical growth rate. And I'm glad he says that to us, you know, 1, 2, 20 times a day, because he's right. And he's basically saying, look, the growth rate is even higher than we thought it was going to be. Not quite double, but it's getting up there, right? And so if we don't do something and we aren't more efficient, then, you know, the growth is going to get in the way of some of the things that we hold valuable. So, you know, all of these things are important, and AI is going to help us in a targeted way figure out what it is. And I think that another note is it's not big and scary in this context, at least not for me, because we're building it, right? Essentially, we're building it. We're teaching it. We're programming it. And I know Dr. Carell's going to say some more about that.
Well, if you want to put dollar amounts to the, you know, those type of investments, the current 4-year transportation plan is $633 million. And then the 25-year plan is $4.9 billion. So it's a lot of investment that this is going to impact.
Okay, so Dr. Carell, can you talk about the number and types of data sets you are using to advance this work?
So we are using multiple data sets that are sourced from different sources to advance our work, because all of these data sets are kind of connected to each other and they inform one another. So these data sets are sourced from official state and federal government sites, including PennDOT, US Census Bureau, US Bureau of Economic Analysis. Our current work uses crash data, roadway, and bridge condition information systems. Bridge condition information from PennDOT, and socioeconomic and demographic data are sourced from US Census Bureau. Each of these data sets now have hundreds of variables. For example, speed on highways, structural conditions of bridges and roadways, crashes reported at red lights, median household income, age of housing, and many, many more factors, which are then used together in conjunction with each other to make data-driven decisions.
And these come from like literally tens of thousands of incidents. So you can see how that would not be able to fit into a spreadsheet. So, I mean, he's kind of scraping information from just an incredible amount of police reports or incident reports, literally tens of thousands of them. So it's just sort of ramping up what you're able to do and what data you can use to analyze.
We use GIS, Geographic Information System, as a base for bringing all of this data together. And then we, you know, like bring them at the same resolution for analysis. And then we run AI machine learning models on that to do predictions.
Can you give us an example of how you might use crash data to develop a predictive model?
So crash data, you know, like whether it comes from PennDOT or USDOT, is basically, you know, like reported by police officers who answer, you know, like yes or no questions to different incidents, like was it raining at the time of the crash? Were there like any other factors involved in the crash? Each crash is then tied to a specific road corridor, which, you know, like we use an ID to assign the crash to the road corridor. So let's say we look at one corridor and see that 30% of the crashes happened in the rain. That gives us a clue that rain might be a factor in crashes on that road. Once we pull all of that information together, like several of variables, for example, how often crashes happen in at rain, at night, or on poorly marked road, we can spot patterns. Then we use those patterns to create a predictive model. That's, you know, like just a simple tool that helps us say, this road has conditions that have led to more crashes in the past. It's more likely to see crashes again. This way, we are not just reacting to crashes, we are getting ahead of them. It helps planners and policymakers decide where to invest in safety. Like, should we have better signs, lightings, or high friction road surfaces on curbs? You know, like prevent crashes before they happen again.
Hey, that's pretty cool. So give us some interesting data. Give us the top three causes of crashes in the Lehigh Valley. You mentioned rain. Is that one of the top three?
Rain is not, actually. So the models are built in different ways. So, you know, like while the top factors that increase the likelihood of injury or fatal crashes in the Lehigh Valley region were fatigue. I don't know, like people ever think of it or not, but most of crashes happen when people are tired. Illegal drug users, excessive speeding, summer months, and dusk lighting conditions.
Summer months? What is that? Yeah.
Because you see more traffic on the road and that increases the likelihood of crashes. Summer months would be all of the months that are considered to be the summer.
So June, July, August.
So texting isn't even one of the top factors. Distracted driving.
It is not.
But it's a huge problem.
Yeah, it's a huge problem. But, you know, like we only gave you the information on injury or fatal crashes.
Okay.
But we also built a model that has a property damage crashes. In that one, texting came up to be, you know, like the most, like one of the most important causes.
Okay.
There's also sort of a slightly different list for just things that are present in traffic. Didn't necessarily cause the injury, but they're sort of present. For instance, you know, running a red light is like the number one thing that's present in an accident.
Unbelted drivers, backed up traffic congestion were also like some of the factors we noticed that were present at the crash site, but were not the cause of the crash.
Yeah, you don't think of that. Backed up traffic, definitely, you know, they probably cause kind of a fender bender, but it's still an accident.
Yeah, and you know what's weird is you rarely saw people running red lights prior to the 2020 pandemic, and now you see it all the time. Like, what happened? Like, why do people think that it's okay to, you know, just barrel through an intersection? And that's why you have these problems, right? They're not rare anymore. And that's why we all need to, and you know, driver behavior is something that like we can't control. Right? Texting and driving, we can't control. We think that this is why, you know, the state through Governor Shapiro has basically, like, you can't even have your cell phone in your hand, like, is improving basically the penalty system for violating these situations, because people's lives are at risk, right? Their property is at risk. And that's just not okay. And I know the work that Dr. Krell is doing is giving us some insight on, you know, where is this happening, which will help law enforcement with more targeted efforts. And hopefully, unfortunately, sometimes you just have to ticket a bunch of people in a location, pull them over for speeding, you know, through the law enforcement system in order to kind of get change in a location. But I mean, really, that's one of the primary things that you can do in terms of driver behavior.
Actually, that's, you know, like the advantage of also like using AI, because earlier, like, we could only predict for a, you know, entire region, but we could not point it down to a particular corridor. But now using the AI, we can point it down to the particular corridor and also like predict at what year what happened. That makes it like really different from other kinds of models.
Yeah, and the other thing that I like that it does too is if you have an anomalous situation, you can train the AI to pick up on the anomaly. Mm-hmm. Because too often, and we hear it with discussions on the housing market all the time, a popular myth that all of these people are coming in from New York or New Jersey, buying up properties and turning them into rentals, which is why no one can find a home to buy. That's not true, right? Of course, it happens to some extent, but it is not the main reason why we have a housing shortage or why there's difficulty in ownership units. We haven't had enough constructed. And so AI can actually help us eliminate some of these situations, well, not eliminate situations, but eliminate from the data anomalous situations that will help us be accurate overall and make sure that we're not perpetuating, you know, myths or not understanding if it is a myth or if it's reality, right? So AI can actually help us figure out how to live in reality, interestingly enough, using these, you know, artificial means. It's a pretty cool thing.
It's also just to say, for example, you know, like if we have 10,000 units in a certain area, and people are moving in, and, you know, like initially they were like charged $2,000. Until, you know, like the 10,000 units is filled 70%, you won't see a substantial rise in, you know, like housing costs.
Oh, and the rent.
The moment it pushes, you know, like outside the 7,000, it moves to 8,000 or 9,000, the housing costs increase. Previous modeling approaches do not factor for that. So that's, you know, like what we are actually factoring into.
So can I ask a clarifying question about one of the top factors you mentioned was dusk lighting conditions. Is that when, you know, the sun is setting and it's blinding people?
Yes. It's probably because it's blinding people. And also, like, you know, like this one couples with fatigue, because people get really tired during that time coming back from work. And that drastically increases the likelihood of, you know, like getting injured or killed.
They're also hangry at that point, too. We start to see like poor driver behavior sometimes later in the day as well because of the drop in blood sugar. Yeah.
Mm. Record hangry is not on the list. That's not up here.
So, Saddam, did you notice roads where the safety was improved since the last transportation safety plan?
Yes. Our previous transportation safety plan pointed out several stretches in the Lehigh Valley, which were like high crash corridors. Some of those that have seen reduction in crashes are the Cedar Crest Boulevard in Southern Whitehall, East Susquehanna Street in Salisbury Township, Kings Highway in Lower Milford, William Penn Highway in Palmer Township, Route 329 in North Whitehall. Some roads like those at the intersection of Freemansburg Avenue, Coolidge Street, and Willow Park Road in Bethlehem Township, Riverview Drive and Birch Road in North Whitehall, Main Street and West Union Boulevard in Bethlehem all have seen a reduction in crashes. All of these roads were targeted for improvements after the last transportation safety plan was updated.
Yeah, so you can see how we did it before, still made a big difference, had an impact on reducing and improving safety. So we have pretty high hopes for the future.
Yeah. Matt, are there factors that surprised you because they weren't a major cause of crashes?
There definitely were. So even though I have to do this for my job and get ready for the show and everything, I'm just kind of fascinated by the stuff. So I'm always looking for anomalies. So I was, sifting through the list and wondering, well, why are these things not big factors? And one of them was running a stop sign. You figure if running a red light is like the number one factor, how can running a stop sign, isn't that kind of like running a red light light? But apparently not. I had to ask our planners, like, why is this one such a big factor in injury accidents and the other one's not? And they said, well, a red light, it tends to be in a high volume, high speed area. Stop signs are in neighborhoods all over the place. They're kind of low volume and low speeds. So there might be a fender bender, but you didn't have an injury accident. And then the other one was marijuana use. I just assumed with medical marijuana being such an increase, and it's now legal in this state, and all of our neighbors actually recreational marijuana, it's so far down the list that you would think it wouldn't be. I'm not going to offer any explanations for why that is, and I'm going to take the fifth beyond that. But and I didn't ask our planners about that one, but it's
Yeah,
on the
please
list and it
don't
surprised
ask.
me.
Well, it surprises me too because, well, I smell it lots of times driving behind people daily. Pretty much, I can say that I'm behind or near somebody who's smoking in their car. So that is kind of interesting. And you are seeing billboards now that have the message, like you used to have with drunk driving, don't drive while high. I kind of thought that would be an indicator that it was a bigger problem.
Well, yeah. I mean, I don't know if you saw Lehigh Valley News recently, but they posted a story about some DUI targeted areas that they've been, I don't know how you say it, like certain nights that they'll do things or certain locations that they'll do things. But one of the things that happened in a most recent one is they found a lot of people that were driving impaired, a lot of people. And it wasn't just over the weekend. So, people shouldn't be driving impaired. I think we've all been taught that since before we even had a driver's license. We need to be mindful and respectful adults that, not only are we risking our own lives, but we're risking other people's lives and we're risking damage to other people's properties. And that can cost you. And it's a lot more than costing you money. I mean, how do you live with yourself if you run somebody over and they pass away, right? So, I mean, we really do need to be respectful and mindful that driving is a privilege. So made sure that I wanted to get that PSA in there too, because it is great when we do data updates and now transportation safety plan updates, and we find out that there's been a reduction in serious injuries, fatalities, property damage in a location. That means that, we're being more successful in that location. Not, as an agency per se, but as a society, right? And so we want to start to tamp down on some of the aggressive driving, impaired driving, running of red lights, things of that nature that are really causing issues around the Lehigh Valley.
Yeah. So, Matt, you have a lot of contact with the public. How do they react to these methods for transportation planning?
I don't know that we've kind of rolled them out right in front of folks. They'll certainly hear it on this. We're certainly not hiding it, but people do tend to be afraid of AI, that it's going to eliminate jobs, or that it's going to run rogue without human control. They're worried about Cyberdyne Systems and Skynet, and I'm going to let your younger listeners Google that one so they can go see a cool movie. I'm sort of dating myself for those references. But in our case, we sort of control the model. We feed everything in, so there's no rogue. But the other thing is, in our case, probably created a job. It did not eliminate one. I mean, so I don't think Saban would be here if we were not doing this and he was not skilled at this. So in our case, I mean, it actually created another job, and it's going to make our roadways safer.
Right. And when you create the AI models, you train it, but you continue to train it, right? Information changes, behaviors change. And so you're constantly feeding the model, training the model, refining the model in order to be accurate. And so that requires a lot of management. But I think it's a testament to the type of new industries and new jobs that we're seeing not only across the country, but definitely here in the Lehigh Valley. There are more and more and more opportunities to grow your skills and to have a very, very long and happy and profitable career in these types of fields. But it requires you to be dedicated to and have access to obtaining the type of education that you need and be a really sharp, compound, complex thinker. But I mean, that's really what the jobs of now and the jobs of even the immediate past have required. Now it's only going to require more and more and more of those compound complex thinking types of roles like Dr. Correll has. So we're really lucky to have him here and have him in this region.
Definitely. Becky, will this apply to other planning projects outside of the transportation network? And where does this go from here?
Oh, Dr. Correll can answer that. He's already cooking a few things.
So we, can apply this to like different kinds of things. Like I was telling you earlier that we could like model out the housing shortage because we know like when it's gonna get packed, the model will know basically. And we'll train the model in such a way like based on, like foundations of statistics that we know exactly that the model is not, like getting in too much data and not crapping out the results, but we like monitor the model like really closely so that we, like make sure that whatever we are predicting is 100% accurate. That said, we can apply AI models to not only, like transportation planning, but to, like several things, including, like these models are actually used for fraud detections and like several other fields. It's expanding everywhere, so we'll use it for different things.
Yeah, one of the things that we've been talking about, and we're actually doing a little pilot, which you won't hear about today, but I'll just drop a little, plant a little seed here in the soil. But we're actually trying to figure out, what the cost of sewer service is in certain locations and, what's the best way to price that. We can use it to look at when do we think that certain locations and certain plants are going to reach sewer capacity. I know nobody wants to talk about waste, but if you don't have an effective and efficient way to manage waste, you can't support a community. It is one of the most critical and the most important things that planners worry about because it's the foundation of everything. From housing to businesses to hospitals. I mean, without water and then an effective way to treat the effluent, you can't support a region. For a very long time, when we had more rural areas than we have now, there was a lot of these kind of jam in the cul-de-sac, put a bunch of houses on well and septic on 1 acre lots. People move in them. They don't understand that they have to maintain the septic system. Septic fails. Wells are contaminated. Maybe not on your property, but on your neighbor's property, right? But then you start having like one cul-de-sac after another cul-de-sac, and then it turns into an actual development. And that's how, you get the suburbs, right? It's the age-old story of, how do you end up with a place like Lower Macungie, which is substantially different than it was 20, 30, 40, and definitely 50 years ago, right? That went from an area of crossroad villages into third most populous community in the Lehigh Valley. And by the way, the Lehigh County Authority has done a very good job of this. But when Lower Mac developed, it worked with Lower Mac and the communities around there to make sure that there was efficient and effective sewer system. You have to invest in that over time, right? And you can say the same thing for the Bethlehem Authority, the Eastern Suburban Water Authority, and so on and so forth. So as we continue to densify and to fill in these urbanized corridors between like I-78 and Route 22 to the north, where we have the majority of our population and jobs either within that or immediately adjacent to that, we have to really look at those utility systems. We have to look at those utility systems where we see new growth corridors, like up 33, for example. And so we can use AI and predictive modeling to see when those will reach capacity, what their investment strategy could be, who uses those facilities now. Are those users being charged fees that match their usage? And then be able to ultimately, those sewer and water systems, because even monitor that more in real time. So, I mean, these are just some things that we're thinking about, sticking our toe in the water to pilot. But you could really apply this modeling and AI to a variety of things that could benefit our community and help to manage growth in a responsible way that's more effective and more cost conscious, as well as cost saving for everybody.
Well, it certainly sounds like we'll have more conversations about the use of AI in the future. I want to thank you, Becky, Matt, and Dr. Correll, for your time this evening. We are out of time. So if you would like to listen to this program again, you can go to wdiy.org, the WDIY app, or your favorite podcast platform. I'm your host, Margaret McConnell, and you are listening to WDIY 88.1 FM. Have a great night.